Welcome to the DDHD podcast. My name is Marwan Monomini.
Juice.
And we got a very, very special guest for you today. He is a global motivational speaker, a five-time featured TED Talk speaker and counting, a guy that basically goes around Fortune 500 companies to motivate their workforce with clientele including Tesla, Facebook, IBM, Boeing, you know, just the usual
big,
casual.
Big.
And also a very recognizable global stand-up comedian. And I'm talking about no one other than Jose Piranha. And let's give it up.
In the building.
Thank you.
How you doing, Jose?
I'm doing great. For the benefit of your listeners and viewers, I'll mention right away that I have a stutter. Your internet is working just fine.
That's great, man. That's amazing. You definitely know how to break the ice right off the bat. And we got a lot to unpack today, man. We're very excited to learn about your journey, how you got here from halfway across the world, how you're able to achieve this level of success. And I think you're the epitome and definition of how others might perceive as a weakness and how you turned it into a big strength. So I want to start from the beginning. Like, you're from Lebanon, right?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Lebanon. Mm-hmm. And I moved to Canada at the age of 18 to do my undergrad in Montreal.
Nice, man. And I wanted to ask, like, at what point in your life did you notice, or did your family notice, you had a stutter?
According to my mom, as early as age 2, she had picked up on some disfluency in my speaking. In fact, she's still waiting for me to finish saying my first word. But basically, yeah, I've always I have always had it.
Okay, man, that's insane. And I'm assuming growing up in Lebanon, that probably differentiated you from, you know, everybody else around you. How was that experience growing up? Like, you know, was it tough growing up in Lebanon with a stutter?
It is a country or a society, as you know, as a fellow Lebanese, where being different can at times be more challenging.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So I'm sure it applies to to other cultures too. Mm-hmm. And it led to me wanting to avoid speaking and people as much as I possibly could. Okay. So my default was avoidance.
Oh, wow. And at what point did you start getting more comfortable? Was it when you moved to Canada, or was it during Lebanon did you start getting comfortable speaking?
So at the age of 15, I think it was, I did this summer program at a boarding school in the US called Phillips Academy. It was just a 5-week thing. And I remember the first day at the dorms, we had to say our names in front of the whole group, and that was a moment I used to absolutely dread.
Okay,
but in that moment, I thought, I could do it differently this time. I'm in a new environment and no one knows me here. So this might be a chance for me to acknowledge it right away so that it doesn't affect me every time I have to interact with someone. So it's my turn to speak. I say, hi guys, my name is Jose, and I speak like shit. And even though nowadays I don't really use that same sentence, it's not very eloquent or even accurate, but in that moment it was the first time that I got myself to acknowledge my difference right away. And that was me planting a seed that my future self was able to continue working on as a comedian.
Okay, wow.
It's big.
At what point did you figure out that you have a sense of humor, or you made people laugh?
See, he must have made the whole class laugh, right? When he did that. If any indication, man, I would have died, man. I thought that's so funny what you just said.
See, what's interesting is that for me, comedy was not this thing I was naturally good at. Mm. It was simply the realization that if I make jokes about this thing that I felt so deeply insecure about, then that seems to instantly alter the dynamics in that interaction. Mm. So it was more of me having had that insight, coupled with the fact that I have always enjoyed stand up as a viewer.
Right.
And lastly, we can also add the fact that in my, so towards the end of my undergrad, I began doing this thing called Toastmasters to work on overcome the fear of speaking through public speaking.
Okay, wow.
I've seen those posts about Toastmasters. Can you talk to us more about that?
Yeah, so it's this international public speaking club. They have them all around the world. And so in my second year of undergrad, I had begged all my professors to exempt me from every single presentation. And if any class had a participation mark, I would go see the prof and say, hey, I can't really speak up in the class, so could I do some extra homework instead of having to ever speak?
Wow.
And so that's where I was,
right,
in terms of my mindset. And even though I had learned this breathing technique already, which does help me quite a bit to control the stutter, as long as I was unwilling to openly sound different, no amount of help in terms of different techniques was going to be relevant. So it was really, so after I avoided speaking as much as I possibly could, I mean, I was controlled by that fear.
Yeah.
I joined Toastmasters my third year in undergrad. And then the last year I joined the debating club. And those were two key steps on my journey.
Talk about facing your fear head on like a locomotive, man. You, damn. Daredevil. That's amazing, man. It's it takes a lot of courage, would you say, to do that? To kind of just, I know you're in a new area, right? So, and you said you wanted to try things differently this time around. And I understand that, but like to really join up for all of these activities and submerse yourself into situations where you know it's going to be difficult.
Yeah.
To me, that's courageous, man.
Yeah. So I think it was, interestingly, I think I was driven by the fear of living a life filled with regrets and wasted potential.
You said it.
I heard that,
you
buddy.
You said it, my
heard
friend.
That. That's like everyday thoughts for me.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
So it was really that fear of potentially squandering all of my potential due to being controlled by that fear of judgment, the fear of what will they say. And that's really how I had lived up to that point. So I'd say yes, of course one has to cultivate this courage at the same time. I also think it was that fear of, if I don't do something radical about this right away, I am the same patterns of avoidance will continuously reassert themselves.
Yes.
Man, that makes a lot of sense. You know what's crazy what you're saying is those fears that you have, as much as like, for example, we might not have a stutter, we can relate already to what you're talking about because it's relatable, I think, universally to everybody, you know? And I think most people have a fear of public speaking. And if I look at you, I'd be like, if I see this guy speaking in front of hundreds or thousands of people, that shows me I can do it as well, you know? So it's like, it's crazy as different as you it might seem from you and different people, it's more relatable than other because we're all human beings.
Yeah, so what I say sometimes is that everyone has what I call an inner stutter. And this inner stutter could be the fear of failure, the fear of rejection, the fear of judgments, or even the fear of success is one if one isn't used to associating themselves with good things.
Man, how did that courage come just by yourself? Or were you motivated by something that you saw or you experienced?
I was going to say, have you seen 8 Mile? Was that before or after you
were you
did
listening
that?
To Eminem when this happened?
I was listening to him at the time.
Right.
So I would say, though, it was knowing deep down that there's a quote by Robert Frost that goes, the best way out is always through.
Yes.
Okay. Wow.
Yes.
That's true, man.
And this is a quote that I've often thought about during this journey, because quite often it is tempting to assume that there are going to be some some solutions on the side, but ultimately there is no other way than simply going through it, mm-hmm. and acknowledging that if we wait for the fear to disappear, we will potentially wait endlessly.
Yeah, you got to go through it. You got to go through it. If you wait you're just going to be waiting forever.
Yeah, 100%.
One of my favorite quotes, actually, and I love what you just said, is similar. It's success is on the other side of fear. Mm. You know, I heard that from, who did you say your quote was from?
It's by Robert Frost.
Robert Frost, right, great author. Not as much as a philosopher as him, but pretty close. Will Smith said that.
I thought you were about to say Rocky Balboa or something.
Right? I got that from him, and I believe it. You know, there's things that we're all scared of, man, but until you challenge yourself and put yourself in those situations and like Jose said, go through it, you know, you won't reach to the other side. You'll never find that success.
100%, man. Yeah. Let's talk about that, because I heard that you challenged yourself by speaking to 100 strangers a week to get more comfortable speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, tell us a little bit more about that.
In fact,
I was doing that this afternoon before coming here. So every time...
Brunch, right?
Oh, no. Yeah.
He just has a lineup of 100 people. Next.
Interacting with every person in the restaurant. What are you having? What are you having? No, so how I do this exercise is I go to the mall and I will ask for directions to 100 people.
Really? Okay.
Wow.
And this is an exercise I've done for years. I do it before, I would say, if not every, before most speaking engagements and stand-up comedy shows. And this exercise is all about desensitizing oneself to the fear. And really, it is when we continuously expose ourselves to that fear that the worst case scenario loses its power in our mind.
Is that why you're so popular? Everybody's looking at you probably right now in the camera. It's like, that's the guy I gave directions in New York. That guy's the lost guy in center, you know?
He wasn't lost at all.
So what made you come up with that? Like,
so I had learned about this exercise on a speech therapy course I had gone to, and I was like, this exercise is extremely powerful as something I should really incorporate in my lifestyle. And it has been the most effective thing I've done to gradually change my relationship with fear.
That's dope.
Because I often say that, like, after hundreds of these stand-up comedy shows and speaking engagements all around the world, I can say that is good news and bad news about fear. The bad news is that fear never goes away. The good news is that fear is that fear never goes away. And if we know that something is a constant, why would we wait for it to go away before we take the action that we know will take our lives to the next level? So it is not about waiting for the fear to go away. It's about acting. At first, it's acting in spite of the fear.
Right.
But that quickly turns into acting because of the fear.
Right.
And then acting thanks to the fear if you use it as a compass.
Mm.
You can probably relate to
fear
that.
Fear is a compass. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, man. I'm smiling over here because you're just hitting everything on the head for me, man. Like, I've been, and I'm sure a lot of people out there too are feeling the same way, you know? We all have these things, man, but you just got to go through it, man. Use the fear. Use the fear. Don't let it hinder you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love that.
I wanted to ask, what came first, stand-up comedy or public speaking, like corporate public speaking?
It was definitely the stand-up that came first. So even though I had started going to Toastmasters before, I only perceived it as this exercise to work on my stutter.
Right.
Okay. So at the time, I did not look at it as a portal towards a potential profession. It was merely this fear-defying action. Mm-hmm. When I moved to Toronto, and I also was attending to Toastmasters here.
Right.
I then had a friend who in that same club who was about to get into stand-up.
Okay.
And he was about to take a class, right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. At Second City.
Hmm. Shout out Second City.
Yeah.
You're an alumni there.
We're alumni because of Rochester. You told me to go there.
Yeah, there you go.
Classes. I did, yeah.
Great place, man.
Yeah. Yeah, so I did it, and then I performed stand up for the first time, and I remember at that first show, all of the other people in that class had invited all their friends, their family members. I didn't tell
anybody?
Anyone. I was like, I have no idea how this is going to go. Like,
I was the same way. I did not want to tell a soul, but I was so happy everybody else invited everybody, so we got a full crowd for us.
Nice.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, so I did it, and then a few months after that, I start to do some public speaking. A few months after that, the first TED Talk. And then things kept on evolving from there.
Wait, Jose, you can't just be like, I did stand up, I started a couple of public speaking a couple of months after, and then I landed TED Talk. Like, I'm assuming you did well in your stand up, and how did you get into the public speaking to get, like, everybody knows TED Talk, bro.
Yep.
So how did that journey come aboard to get to that point?
Yeah, so when I started to perform stand up on the regular, I started to post about these shows online, and I then came across a few different storytelling shows, which were a great avenue for me to actually get into the habit of learning how to deliver a message through a story.
Okay.
So I started to do those, and there are a few in Toronto. There, at one point, I was doing these talks at this event called Mo Mondays, and then Speaker Slam, and then Philo's Voices. So these were local events happening, and I got to hone my craft, and I then had this video, I had won a few of those public speaking competitions.
Okay, nice.
Let's leave that part out.
Yeah.
Didn't want to mention that. I'm actually really good at this, by the way.
And after winning a few of those competitions,
I
then had that first opportunity to speak at TEDx in 2018.
Nice.
Wow.
And after that, I start to do more and more talks at companies, at schools, at conferences.
Right.
Wow, man. And then you, is that how you started turning your name into a brand for public speaking? Like, did you I'm assuming you realize, hey, this is working. You know, companies are reaching out to me, whatever, you know, this could be a livelihood.
The first time I heard from a conference and they asked me, what are your fees? I was like, huh?
You pay for this?
I was just so confused at the time, because it was truly this path that I embarked on, not with professional aspirations whatsoever. It's this path I had embarked on because I was driven by the desire to conquer this fear and these insecurities that for most of my life were controlling my every move. Mm-hmm. So it was really not ever meant to turn into a profession,
right?
But then it made so much sense,
right,
for me to then continue on that path.
Okay.
because not only was it very satisfying to continuously conquer these fears, but at the same time, I also found it very fulfilling to hear from the people in the audience after my talks, people who would come up to me and say, your talk has inspired me to do X, Y, Z. And so it's the combination of striving towards self-mastery on the one hand, and having an impact on the world. It's that combination that really made me realize that, hey, this is the right path for me. And of course, if you receive validation from the market, mm-hmm. then that's also a key third factor.
Man,
very key for me. Mm-hmm. I would have gave up creating music, being my creative self in arts if it wasn't for the people saying like, yo, like, you're really good at what you do, what your song really inspired me, like, mm-hmm. you know, like I used to do a lot of public speaking myself in high schools. Mm-hmm. I was with a crew called What's the 411, and we go and talk to kids about like domestic violence, and you know, these chips even brought me to Ethiopia so I could experience how life was over there, right?
Wow.
And I created music and performed these music for these kids over there, you know? And to this day, like, I get people coming up to me saying like, yo, you came to my school and performed, and like the impact that had on me as a little kid, I never forgot that, yo. Whoa. You know, the way you did your music, it wasn't like what we were hearing now, it was impactful for me, you know. And to hear those type of stories is like, it could be the worst day, things ain't going for me anymore, like, you know, you're at that borderline where you want to quit, but those messages and those words of encouragement really like inspired me. Mm-hmm. You know, so I feel you.
I couldn't agree more. Because if someone is a motivational speaker, that of course that doesn't imply that you don't go through your own ups and downs, right?
Yes.
And if you are going through a down, it is often those conversations, those interactions that remind us that, okay, I am doing this for myself and other people whose lives might get positively inspired.
Well said.
That's so true, man.
Mm-hmm. So true.
Speaking of music, I heard you sing.
When I sing, I don't stutter.
Really?
And it seems to be common among people who stutter, and I'm often asked, hey, why don't you sing all the time then?
Sing your speeches.
Yes. And to which I say, because I don't want to look deranged. And some people might assume that I would save a lot of time if I sang instead of speaking.
Mm.
But have you ever seen a musical?
Hate them.
Yep.
They're not known for being short.
No.
I
skip them every time.
I mean, they're not known for brevity, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
So maybe Google would not pay you that money if you were singing that speech. I don't think so.
That's true.
That's amazing, man. I wanted to ask too about, you know, where your stand-up career is today, your motivational speaking career is today, and what do you see yourself in the future?
These two careers go hand in hand.
Mm.
I find that sometimes if I only do speaking and no stand-up, it feels like something is missing. And if I only do stand-up and no speaking, it also feels like something is missing. I find that the two have been really complementary for me. In terms of the speaking, I've been very grateful to speak at organizations all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps on evolving beautifully, which has been wonderful. It has its own challenges if you have this international traveling schedule, and that has only reinforced the importance I found of cultivating mental wellness. So when I am on these international trips, so in the past 2 months, I was in a different country or city every week, right? And I recall at one point I was in Oman, which is near Dubai. It's a small country. And then the week after, I was in Seattle. So
way different points of the world.
Two extremities of the world, almost. And I find that it's key to have habits that will cultivate that mental wellness. Things like meditation, exercise, reading books that will keep me in a positive state of mind. So in terms of the speaking, I've been very excited about how it's been evolving. In terms of the stand-up, it's been happening in parallel. On the one hand, I produced this show, Sofa Laughs, with my friend Emil Mamari.
Sofa Laughs. Yeah. Very successful
show. I've
heard
of this, yeah.
Can you just touch up on what that is and how it started?
Sofa Laughs started as a stand-up comedy show in my good friend Emil's living room in 2019. And we would do these shows with 20 people once a month. And we'd have these amazing comedians who have performed at Just for Laughs, who've been on Netflix.
Wow.
And they would come do sets.
Nice.
In the living room. And then after the pandemic, we were actually, even towards maybe the end of it, we started doing that same show, but in venues.
Nice.
And most recently, we had this one show at, so we tend to do it every month at Comedy Bar and occasionally at Absolute Comedy.
And you said that you sold over 200 seats last Sofa Laughs, right?
Yeah, last one at the end of February, headlined by the hilarious Toronto comedian Nima Naz.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice. And it was, shout out Nima.
This guy's too funny. I know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's really cool.
It was a great show. Yeah,
I bet. Yeah, that sounds really, really cool, man. We gotta come to the next one.
We definitely do. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're in Toronto, check out Sofa Laughs, and if you're not, you never know, it might be coming to a city near you.
That's right.
It might. That almost each one of my speaking engagements, one of the most common questions I get is what was your turning point? And when I hear that question, I hear the assumption, heavily influenced by Hollywood, that all we need for change is one singular breakthrough moment.
Right.
When something just clicks.
Yeah.
As we go running under the rain with
Perry.
with Katy Perry's fireworks in the background.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And if I look back at my own journey of transformation, it didn't happen through a singular breakthrough moment. It happened and happens through what I call millions of micro moments of bravery.
Okay.
These are moments during which I've repeatedly done what I least wanted to do again and again and again until I truly started understanding that fear and action don't have to be mutually exclusive.
True.
Fear and action can coexist. And if we can walk through the world with that mindset, we regain a lot. We acquire this sense of agency in the making of our own destiny.
It's true.
Man, how do you feel about that, you know, as an artist that's been in the game, you know?
What do you mean?
Like in terms of what he's talking about in micro moments of bravery versus the Hollywood picture perfect.
That is a great way to look at it. And as a kid who grew up watching cinema, you think it's really like that, you know, like if I could just get this one moment. I remember like thinking as a young artist, right? Like if Jay-Z would come inside me, if Diddy would come and like, you know, put me on the label, or you hear about these guys with these Cinderella stories who like get discovered and then they're off to the races and that's what changed their life, you know? And you hope to be that person, but I think you have to be the change that you want to see. And that happens every day in life, you know, like choosing to hit the gym instead of playing Xbox, you know, like choosing to stay up an extra hour to work on your craft instead of going to sleep, or, you know, like folk making the sacrifices that need to be made to become the better version or the best version of yourself, you know? And that's a daily practice. That's not the one thing that happens that changes it. Because if you think about it, if that one thing happens, a lot of times you might not even be ready for that, yo. You might not even know how to handle it when it happens, when your life's flipped upside down. Whoa. Right? Like when you're Macaulay Culkin and you do Home Alone and then all of a sudden you're the biggest actor in the world and you were just this 8-year-old kid, you know? Like you're not ready for that yet, so. Doing all these micro changes and building up that strength and toughening that skin, I think just is a better option, you know?
Absolutely. And if you also think about it, most of our lives is spent in the micro moments, not in the macro moments.
Right.
So we might get these occasional these occasional macro moments of I've just done this big talk, I've just done this big show, this big musical performance.
Right.
That macro moment out of your day or your week or your life is a really tiny part of it compared to all of the other micro moments.
Right.
So that is, those are the moments ultimately that we can influence the most.
Yes.
So that hopefully the macro moments happen without us having to fixate on these outcomes.
I love it.
Man.
So true.
Before we ask our wrap up question, I wanted to ask about, like, we talked a lot about a lot of high points in your career and some of the challenges that you went through, but there must have been very dark moments, you know, in your journey and in your life. Was there a particular time where you felt like, you know, you were at rock bottom, you know, and what happened there? You know, because you're a very positive person, which I love, but it must have come with some struggle.
Yeah. And in fact, I would say it has come and it still can happen, right? One moment that comes to mind, I had this big family reunion and I was at the time so terrified of speaking.
Really?
And interacting even with family members. Wow. That I was hoping to find a way to avoid having to attend that big reunion, right? And so I recall a few days before that big gathering, after I took a shower, I went outside and I hung out for half an hour, completely drenched, with the intention of hopefully catching a cold.
Oh, wow.
So that I would have an excuse to miss that gathering.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And when someone meets me today and they see I might be social or I might enjoy interacting with others, or that I have the confidence to go up on stage, what they might not know is that I have faced these moments when I was completely controlled by that fear of judgment.
Wow.
Yeah.
And these are supposed to be the people closest to you, right? This family, if anybody should be able to, you know, I guess understand in a way, it should be them, right? Like, or who you could feel most comfortable talking around, right? It should be.
Sometimes family is more intimidating than strangers, I find.
But it is like that. Right.
Family's the friends that you choose.
Yeah.
So it's like, it can be them. That's crazy, man. I've never heard of that before, you know?
I mean,
was it cold rain or was it hot rain?
Did you have a towel?
Yeah, did you have a towel?
So this is a shower. I did have a towel.
Okay.
No, man, it is inspiring. Juice, you want to ask our
First of all, I want to thank you for coming by. Because I think you inspired a lot. You gave us a lot of gems today. This is the Dreams Don't Have Deadlines podcast, and I think you made people want to continue their dreams and let them know that at whatever point in your life, you can get through it, right?
And the way things are today don't have to be the way things are tomorrow.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, like, because I feel like there's people out there right now who are at that crossroads, right? And they're ready to give up on it. So what would you tell them to make sure that dreams don't have deadlines?
If I could go back in time and talk to myself before I embarked on this journey, and this advice would be relevant naturally to anyone who is hoping to create radical change in their own lives, I would really tell that person three things. One, it's okay to be different.
Right.
Own what makes you unique.
That's hard to do as a teenager, probably. You never understand that as a kid, dude. It takes a while.
Yeah. And especially in my case, because as teenagers, we want to fit in, the best way to fit in if you stutter is by not talking, right? So the first thing I would say is own that difference.
It. Yes. Mm.
Two, as we were saying before Rochester, is to use fear as a compass.
Right.
That will guide you to where you need to go.
To go.
And then three, once you find that thing that scares you the most, do it.
Do it.
But then do it again and again and again.
That's the key.
It isn't a singular transaction with the universe. It's this repeated process of having to look at these dragons in the eyes, taking a deep breath, and walking through that fire.
Dope.
I'm gonna write that in my journal. Use that every
walk
day.
Walk through that fire, man.
That's some great advice.
Yep. I think. Go ahead, Marwan. I thoroughly enjoy talking to you today, man. Honestly, thank you for doing this.
Yeah, man.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time.
Yes, and thank you guys for having me on.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed watching the some clips of the podcast.
Wicked.
On IG, so I'm pumped to have shared this experience with the two of you today.
Yeah, hear that? The word spreading, yo. Absolutely. DDHD, we coming for you.
We got the Jose Peranian signature right here, so
that's
watch
right.
out.
Feel that?
No.
Let's go, TED Talks. Oh!
No, but thank you so much for your time, man. I think you taught us a lot.
Yes.
I think you inspired our community of dreamers. Yes. We're looking forward to your journey to keep continuing growing and seeing where it is. You know, when you're on Netflix, just see us in the audience, maybe sign an autograph, say hello, so we could be like, we remember talking to this guy once.
Mm-hmm. And vice versa.
Yeah, yeah.
You're welcome.
You're making me blush, Jose, you know?
Yeah,
but no, this was amazing. I can't wait for this episode to come out.
Yeah.
This is the DDHD podcast. I'm your co-host, Marwan Menominee. I've got
Juice Rochester, Rochester Juice.
And finally, we have our special guest,
Jose Peranian.
Hey.
And what is our ending theme?
A dream is what you make it, but you'll never make it
without a dream.
That's right,
Let's
man.
Get it,
Thank
baby.
You,
dreams
everybody.
Don't have deadlines.
Peace. Work hard and I handle my business. Look up in the sky, whole squad, let's get it. No limit, no.